Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because cops are too heavy. Thank you for tuning in and giving me the opportunity to talk to you about one of my favorite subjects, and that is firearms, the Second Amendment, and specifically handguns. I started shooting actively in 2004, and I've just grown to love the pastime of the shooting sports, but I also firmly believe in my Second Amendment rights to protect myself. And so it kind of evolved and it grew, and just recently I started doing these shows to hopefully bring some of the passion that I have for my hobby to you, and thank you for tuning in. This is episode 6, and the subject matter of episode 6 is going to be about Glocks, the handgun brand, which is probably, I would say, if not the most popular, probably the second most popular handgun in the world, which is the brand name Glock. And I think just about everybody, even those who are not familiar with firearms, has heard the name Glock. We see Glocks everywhere. We see them in the movies. We see them on the belts of law enforcement. We see them in the military. We see them in concealed carry license holders, holsters. We see them just about everywhere because they are so popular. And we're going to talk about the advantages and the disadvantages of Glocks. Before we get started into the main topic matter, I do want to make a couple of follow-up points about my last show. My last show was on the 1911, the venerable 1911 45 ACP, and I made a pretty compelling case as to why 1911s are excellent guns and why you should own one. Also, but I forgot to mention a couple things. Keep them well lubricated. It's important for a 1911 to work properly, for it to be well lubricated. 1911s like to run wet. And one of the major problems with 1911s is that people do not keep them lubricated enough. I'm going to give you a suggestion. I've tried a lot of different firearms lubricants. I've lost count to how many firearms lubricants that I've tried. One that I've had very good luck with is a brand called Militech. M-I-L-I-T-E-C. Militech. You can do an internet search. You can Google Militech, and you will definitely find it. You can find it on eBay. You can find it on GunBroker.com. What I like about it, now, I don't know if their advertising is true or not. I don't know how much of what they say. They claim that it's been through a lot of military testing, and it's one of the few lubricants that the military approves and uses on their AR-15s, yada, yada, yada. Don't know. I have not done the proper research to substantiate their claims. But here's what I can tell you. I've been using Militech for 4 years, and I can give you 4 years worth of endorsement on it. I really especially like the Militech grease. And this also applies to the Glocks that I'm going to talk about today, because Glocks do need lubricant. Contrary to what you've been told, or what you've heard, Glocks do need maintenance and they do need lubrication. What I like about Militech, especially the grease, is that it stays put. So when you grease the slide rails of your 1911 or your Glock or any pistol, you can shoot it hundreds of rounds before you have to put new grease in there. It stays put. That's what I like. It's an excellent lubricant. It's also a cleaner as well. Of course, a lot of lubricants are, But Militech will also get some of the grime and the grunge off of your pistol as well. So check out Militech grease. I would also get a small bottle of Militech oil. These aren't real expensive. I think you can find it for $5 for a pretty good sized bottle of oil, and about $6 for a pretty decent sized tube of grease. When you're talking about a firearm that's going to defend your life, don't skimp on the important stuff like lubrication. Matter of fact, I don't think you should go low quality on anything, quite honestly. But I really am a big believer in Militech. Another good one is a lubricant called Brake Free. Brake Free CLP is also very good as well. Brake Free, you can normally find, they're in black bottles. You can find them anywhere, any sporting goods store that sells firearms, sells guns, or gun supplies and lubricant and stuff. But I'm a real firm believer in Militech. I think it's really good stuff. Try it out. In fact, in the show notes, I will put a link to where I normally buy the Militech that I use. And the other thing that I'll say about 1911s before we get into the Glocks is that you do have to keep them pretty clean as well. Now, I've heard this talked about as being a disadvantage. And you get a lot of people that use Glocks that just brag and brag and brag about how they shoot thousands of rounds without cleaning their Glock, and it still works fine. And Glocks do have that advantage. They'll go thousands of rounds without cleaning, and they'll work, and they'll go bang every time, and they'll be fine. You know, let me put it to you a nice way here, because I want this show to have wide appeal. I don't want to offend people if I possibly can. Cleaning your gun is something you should do anyway. Whether your gun requires cleaning or not, cleaning is something you should do, folks. If you take pride in your firearms, clean them. There's a couple of things cleaning does. First of all, it helps you get to know your weapon. It helps you get to know the different parts of your weapon, how the parts function, what each one of them does. You know, what if you're in a survival situation? What if you're in a survival situation? What if it's a long, drawn-out event and you need reliability, but something breaks on your pistol? You should know how to fix it. If you've been maintaining your gun and you've been cleaning it and you're beginning to know what each part does and you've taken it apart and you've reassembled it, it's probably going to be easier for you to fix it or at least find the part, or you'll know at least be able to pinpoint what's wrong with your gun if something goes wrong with it. So clean your guns, folks. To me, it's a fun event. To me, cleaning my guns, it's a fun event. I love to shoot them, and I love going to the range and shooting and practicing and everything, but it's also a lot of fun to clean them. I've watched a lot of football games while cleaning my guns. It's a great time. Again, unloaded, double check, triple check. It's a shame that I have to put that disclaimer on it, but whenever you talk about firearms, you have to put that disclaimer on it, that make sure you double and triple check to make sure that your firearm is not loaded when you're cleaning the stupid thing. It's always befuddled me how people have either shot themselves or shot portions of their home or whatever while cleaning their gun, right? I'm sure you've heard countless stories about someone's gun going off while they're cleaning it. I've always wondered how could that be? Because if you've done the proper job of making sure your gun is not loaded, then it shouldn't go off while you're cleaning it. That's always been an interesting one to me. It's evidence of a further problem with somebody if their gun goes off while they're cleaning it. And folks, if you hear some background noise going right now, I'm taking advantage of some windshield time, and I'm producing this show. I'm recording it while I'm driving. I have a real good setup for that, but it is pouring rain. I am not too far from Houston, Texas, going on a business trip, and it is a downpour. So that's what you hear if you hear a little bit of extra background noise. But anyway, guns should not go off while you're cleaning them if you've done your job of making sure it's not loaded. Okay, enough on 1911s, but I wanted to give you those 2 points because I forgot to in the last show. Let's talk about Glocks. At the time that I am recording this show, Glocks are my favorite weapon. Now, I'm kind of fickle, but I've stuck with Glocks longer than any other weapon. for various reasons, which I'm going to talk about on this show. So right now, at the time, they are my favorite weapon. I will probably always have a Glock, at least one or two, in my selection of weapons. What's so great and what makes them popular? Well, first of all, let's talk about the marketing. I don't think I've seen a company in recent years, and I mean the last 25 or 30 years, there aren't too many companies that have done much better job than Glock has at marketing their product. There's been a few exceptions, like Microsoft has done a very good job in the computer business. Apple has done a very good job in their business. Toyotas and Hondas have done a very good job in the car business. Glock has done a great job in the pistol and firearms, the handgun business. You know, now they got a break. I mean, they got a break getting into law enforcement and getting, you know, probably 85% of the law enforcement agencies around the world to use their product. And let me explain to you why, in my opinion, again, this is my humble opinion. You're free to disagree if you want. If you don't agree with some things I talk about in this show, by the way, feel free. I like disagreement. I like constructive criticism. Just keep your disagreements civil, but send me a comment on the blog and let me know what you think. My opinion as to why Glock did such a good job of securing law enforcement business is because if you think back to what most cops carried before they carried Glocks, is a lot of them carried revolvers. 38 Special, 357s were very popular for cops to carry. Well, when police departments started looking into weapons that had a greater capacity than revolvers, and I think capacity is the real reason why a lot of police departments got off of revolvers, because, you know, there are 45 caliber revolvers if they wanted more stopping power, so to speak. I think it's because they wanted more capacity. In other words, they wanted to be able to have more rounds in the magazine when the officers were carrying their pistol. Glock came onto the scene with a very, very simple pistol. Excuse me, I got to grab a phone call real quick. Okay, sorry about the interruption, folks. That was my real boss that called. That was my wife. She's the real boss. Gotta take those calls if you know what I mean. Anyway, well, I think what I was talking about there is I was talking about why Glocks, in my humble opinion, why they became popular with law enforcement. First of all, Glock came to the scene and they went they made a proposal with a gun that was simple. It had the simplicity of a revolver, and that's probably Glock's biggest strength, is that they're so simple to operate. Basically, point the gun at what you want to shoot, get your sight picture, and pull the trigger. That's it. Point the gun, align the sights, pull the trigger. Just like a revolver. So, it was pretty easy for the police officers to transition over to the semi-automatic, because this thing was just like a revolver. It was like a high-capacity revolver. It didn't require a whole lot of training. That's what they were used to with the revolvers. Draw, get their sight picture, pull the trigger, because revolvers don't have any safeties or anything. And if you know anything about, for those of you who know about firearms, you know you have different types of trigger actions. You have single action, then you have double action, and then you have what's called double action, single action. Single action means like a 1911, where the trigger only has to perform one action. When you pull the trigger, it releases the hammer. It engages the sear and releases the hammer. That's it. The gun's already cocked. All the trigger does is release the hammer to fire the weapon. A double action is called that because when you pull the trigger, you're doing two things. You're doing two actions. It's cocking the gun, and then it's also releasing the hammer all at the same time in one stroke. So it's usually a lot longer trigger pull than a single action is. Now, with practice, you can learn to shoot them. Glocks, I'm going to explain, are slightly different, which makes it real easy to learn how to shoot them very accurately and very quickly, even though it's a longer trigger pull. Well, those revolvers that the police officers carried were double action, so it was a real easy transition to go from the double action revolver to the double action Glock, or sort of double action. They call it safe action, which I'm going to talk about. But I think that's one reason why the police departments took to the Glock so easily. Cost was another factor. Glock came to the scene with a relatively inexpensive but decent quality handgun. And, of course, you know, with a government agency like a police department and law enforcement, well, that's important. Cost, they're always on a budget. So the cost was also a factor. The durability, I read a lot on the testing that was done by a lot of police departments. As a matter of fact, there are some police departments that laughed when they got a Glock to evaluate. They thought it was a joke. Here was a gun with a plastic frame. It's actually called polymer, but it's a form of very hard plastic, and we're going to talk about that. It's not a disadvantage compared to what people... I mean, contrary to what some people will tell you, you have some Glock haters out there who will try to tell you, oh, that's just a cheap plastic gun. I'll bust that myth in a little while. But, you know, back then in the 80s when police departments were checking them out, they laughed at it because they just it was nothing like they had ever seen. And so they kind of brushed it off. Well, after they did the testing and they saw how simple it was to shoot, how durable it was, how cost-effective it was, they started realizing, hey, maybe this makes sense. And so I really believe that the durability had a lot to do with it. And we're going to talk about the durability of Glocks because, man, no pun intended, they are bulletproof. They are very, very tough. In fact, they're probably the world's toughest handgun. And I'll explain to you some of what the torture tests have proven with Glocks. So I think that was another big area that was appealing to the people that were in the law enforcement, especially the management of the law enforcement agencies. Another big factor was the capacity. And again, I think this was probably one of the major factors, was that they were a higher capacity weapon. You know, the average Glock 9mm holds 15 to 16 rounds minimum. And the full-service weapons, the full-size service weapons, which the Glock 17, actually, the Glock Model 17 was the first Glock adopted by law enforcement, holds 17 rounds in the magazine. That's not why it's called the Glock Model 17, but there's another reason why, and I'll cover that in a minute. But the Model 17 holds 17 rounds of 9mm in the magazine, plus one in the chamber, so the officers could have 18 rounds of 9mm on board without having to reload. A lot better, three times the capacity than a six-shot revolver. So that was a huge factor. And if you go back to, I think it was episode 2 of the Handgun World Show, I talked about whether capacity was important. Capacity definitely is important. And as I mentioned in the last show, I'm not going to throw out a 1911 because it only has eight rounds. You know, some of the advantages of the 1911s is that they're very accurate. And it's easy for a shooter to shoot those accurately. So accuracy is going to win a fight over capacity anytime. You know, a couple of good strong hits are better than five or six misses anytime. But the police officers were starting to get into situations where they had multiple attackers and they wanted to be able to have a larger capacity on board. So those 18 rounds looked a whole lot better than the six-shot revolvers. So here they were looking at a gun that was durable, cost-effective, three times the amount of rounds that they were carrying, and above all, easy to use, very simple, very revolver-like. It was very revolver-friendly. So I think it was those four major factors, plus just very, very good marketing and good salesmanship on the part of Gaston Glock and his team of marketeers. And of course, you know, hey, a good salesman wins the day most of the time. You know, it's about marketing. You know, this is America, and he was breaking into the American market, and he knew that marketing and salesmanship was going to carry him a long way. And I'll have to say this, other firearms manufacturers make very good product, but they're terrible marketers. They're awful. So it was good marketeering on Glock's part as well. So what happens? Glock ends up winning the favor of probably 85 to 90% of the law enforcement agencies out there. So all of a sudden they make this huge splash in the market with a plastic gun. Now let's talk about the myth of the plastic gun. The frame of a Glock pistol is made of polymer. Now, I'm not a Glock certified armorer. Okay, I'm going to put that disclaimer on it. But I've owned them and shot them a long time. I know enough to talk about them technically to be dangerous. Now, you might want to verify some of what I tell you with a Glock armorer. And if you come up with any inaccuracies, please let me know. But polymer is the type of, it is a plastic, but it's a very, very, very good, strong, durable plastic, durable frame material, and arguably it's just as strong or stronger than some of the aluminum that a lot of the 1911s are manufactured out of these days. A lot of 1911s are manufactured out of aluminum, especially the concealed carry type, to keep them lightweight. Well, you know, what's interesting is I went to the shooting range just 3 days ago. 3 days ago, I went over to practice with some of my Glocks, as a matter of fact. And I saw a guy that was trying to rent a pistol at the shooting range. And I heard him ask the gun store clerk if he could rent the Kimber Ultra Carry, which is a small 3-inch 1911-style concealed carry pistol made by Kimber. And the gun store clerk said, well, I'm sorry, sir, I cannot let you rent the Kimber Ultra Carry because it is at Kimber for repair. And he told the story that it had been sent back to Kimber because it had a cracked frame. Those aluminum frames, after they're used a lot, it's not common, but in a very small 1911 made out of aluminum frame, with the force of the 45 ACP cartridge being shot a lot, like range rentals are, the frames can crack, far less likely with a polymer-framed Glock. And one of the reasons why the polymer-framed Glocks don't crack very easily is because that frame flexes. When that gun is fired, during the recoil and during the cycling of the slide, the frame, you can't see it and you won't notice it, but the frame actually does flex. And that avoids a lot of the cracking problems that a rigid aluminum or steel frame, mainly aluminum, can experience when being shot quite a bit. And guess what, folks? The rain has finally subsided. I went through a very short storm there, so you shouldn't hear so much of the background noise. All right, that makes driving a lot easier. Anyway, the polymer frame flexes quite a bit, so it cuts back on the cracking. So that's another major advantage. And even though it's just as strong as the metal, it's got that flex to it, so it really makes for a very, very durable frame. Also, the finish on a Glock is probably one of the best, if not the best, finish in the firearms business. There have been some manufacturers recently that have not completely copied, but copied quite a bit, Glock's finish. Glock calls it tenifer. Tenifer, I think, is, if I'm not mistaken, is the actual metal treating process. But you'll notice that all Glocks are black. They put a black coating over the tenifer. The tenifer finish is actually burned into the metal somehow. I'm not real sure how they do that, but it's extremely rust-proof. You know, because the gun is half polymer, you know that's not going to rust. And the metal parts on the gun are not going to rust very easily either because of the tenifer finish. Now, let me bust a myth. Glocks used to get a bad rap at first. They used to be made fun of a lot because they were called plastic guns. And there was a lot of fibbing going on and people telling tall stories about the fact how a Glock could be run through the metal detector at an airport. Yeah, baloney. Baloney, baloney, that is garbage. That is garbage. The frame, excuse me, the slide, the barrel, and the trigger parts, and many of the internal parts that are attached to the frame are metal. Okay? It's a metal barrel. The parts that count the most on a Glock are metal. If you take a Glock apart, you'll notice that there's four metal rails that the slide slides on. Slides on metal rails. The trigger parts are metal. The striker is metal. The frame is metal. The barrel is metal. The extractor is metal. All the parts that take the most abuse during shooting are steel, folks. So they're not going to go through metal detectors. It's not like you're shooting a big, huge, 100% hunk of plastic. So let me bust that myth right there. But, you know, you're not going to have much rusting going on. And I think that was another big appeal to law enforcement, is that they realized that these guns were going to be very, very low maintenance. And that's good, because I don't know what it is about police officers. And if you're a police officer listening to this, I'm not making fun of you. Okay, let me repeat. I'm not making fun of you. You know, you guys don't get paid enough for the work you do. I'm serious. Police officers don't get paid enough for the work that they do anywhere. Being a police officer is an honorable job. It is. And I mean that. For some reason, though, police officers don't like to do two things. They don't like to maintain their weapons, and they don't like to shoot a lot. Not all of you. I shoot IDPA, which is my competitive shooting league, with a few cops that are really good shooters. And these guys do take care of their guns. But an overwhelming majority of police officers don't seem to like to go to the range a lot. It seems like all they want to do is shoot enough to be able to qualify when they need to qualify. And that's it. Well, I think the police, the managers of the police departments knew that it would be an advantage, a huge advantage, to have a gun that required low maintenance. Okay? Because they probably knew that the officers, most of them, as a large majority, were not going to want to do a lot of it. So that helps as well, and I think that was a big... And for civilians, of course, that's huge. That's huge. You have a lot of people who own firearms that are just not very familiar with firearms. And so now let's talk about the durability and the maintenance factor. The one nice thing about a Glock, and I'm serious, you can do this. Now, I've never done it, but I have seen lots of people do it. I've seen lots of people fire 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 rounds and never clean their Glock. And it works just fine. Doesn't matter what caliber, 9mm, 40, 45, 357 SIG. You can shoot them and shoot them and shoot them and shoot them without a whole lot of cleaning or any cleaning at all, and they still work. Now, there's reasons for that. We'll talk about it. And also, they don't require a lot of lubrication. Most private citizens who own a firearm, again, you know, you have a lot of them. You got so many of them just don't know much about firearms, so they don't know how much they're supposed to lubricate it. Well, Glocks are meant to run dry, and what I mean by that is they're built so that if they don't get a lot of lubrication, it's almost impossible to ruin the gun. Now, this is also very, very important. Let's say you're in some kind of a survival situation. Disaster hits. Okay, disaster hits, and for whatever reason you need to maintain, you need to defend your home and defend yourself. And let's say all you've got at hand is your Glock pistol. Well, there's not going to be time to clean that gun before defending yourself. And if you haven't cleaned it in a long time, you know, if you've shot 1,000 rounds through it and you haven't cleaned it, the Glock is by far the most likely weapon to go bang compared to all the rest. Now, I would say a very close second are SIGs. SIG Sauer, fabulous pistols. Fabulous pistols, very reliable. And matter of fact, the very first pistol I ever owned was a SIG Sauer P226 in 9mm. You know, SIGs also, very, very reliable. If you own a SIG, you know, I'm not going to recommend that you shoot thousands of rounds before cleaning it. But it's probably going to work just like a Glock. Now, the other appealing factor of a Glock pistol, they have very few moving parts. This is why they are so simple. A Glock, I believe, if this isn't exact, I'm pretty close. It only has 33 parts total. That's it. 33 parts. I think a 1911 pistol has more than twice that. And I think SIGs have a whole lot more than 33 parts. Well, what's the advantage of only having 33 parts? Well, the fewer moving parts, the less chance of something breaking. It's like anything. The fewer moving parts, the less chance of something going wrong, something breaking, or the less chance of a malfunction. The fewer parts that have to work together to make something work, the more reliable it's going to be. And if you want to stock parts and extra parts for your Glock, there's really not a lot of parts that you have to stock except for extra recoil springs, extra magazine springs. You always need good magazines. And it probably wouldn't hurt to have an extra slide stop lever or two. Those are about the only four parts on a Glock that need a lot of replacing. The recoil spring. And if you don't know much about guns, look these up. Okay, the recoil spring, the magazine springs, the magazines themselves. And I'm drawing a blank here. Oh, the slide stop lever. Actually, it wouldn't hurt to add a fifth one, an extra magazine release button, too. That just wouldn't be a bad idea to have one magazine release button extra. That's about all you've got to stock. And if you stock that, you're going to keep your Glock running for a long, long, long time. That Glock will probably run longer than you will, and I'm serious about that. There are stories of people actually doing torture tests on Glocks for a couple of 100,000 rounds before they had to do anything major to the pistol. Now, the four parts I just explained to you are not major. Those are routine maintenance replacements. Before any major repairs needed to be done on that Glock, a couple of 100,000 rounds were fired. That's very difficult to do with any other pistol out there. I would say SIGs, Smith & Wesson M&Ps, those are also pretty good. There's been some good torture tests done on those. SIGs and Smith & Wesson M&Ps, I have heard, can really withstand a lot of punishment as well. But I still think Glock is king for durability and just taking a beating. You can shoot Glocks underwater, by the way. Again, not recommended. Please don't do that. Okay, let the professionals who test pistols and know what they're doing do that. I've seen some YouTube videos of some teenage kids. They look like teenage kids shooting Glocks underwater. I wish they wouldn't even put that stuff on YouTube. That's trash. Don't do that stuff. Okay, but they will shoot. They will shoot even underwater, believe it or not. So, I really think that level of durability, that level of simplicity is very important. Which leads me to my next subject. And this is why me, Bob Main, your host, this is why I like the Glock best. Everything I've covered so far is very good. But here's what I like about it. The Glock pistol is a very, very simple pistol to operate. If you look at a Glock, you don't see a lot of levers on that thing. If you look at some pistols, and I'm going to go ahead and pick on SIGs for a minute. You see a lot of different levers on SIGs. If you look at the left side of a SIG pistol, you're going to see two levers. One of them locks the slide back. The other one's called a decocker. In other words, after you chamber a round, you can push one lever and it will decock that. In other words, it'll drop the hammer without firing the gun. And that makes the gun safer to carry. Well, a Glock doesn't have all those levers. It's got a slide stop lever, but it doesn't have a deconking lever. It also does not have a thumb safety. There are no safeties that you have to disengage before shooting a Glock, technically. Now, there are some safeties that disengage in the shooting motion, which I'm going to talk about. But you don't have to remember to flick off a safety or anything like that. There's no confusing levers. Now, under stress, when you are in a self-defense situation, you're going to be under a lot of stress. It's going to be very difficult for you to remember things. You know, you're going to have thugs attacking you. You're going to have people trying to kill you. And let me tell you what, that is a frightful situation. It's going to be very, very difficult for you to think. And to think clearly. And there are lots of reports, a lot of even substantiated reports of people that drew their 1911 and they forgot to disengage the safety. And they were not able to fire back because they forgot to disengage the safety. You hunters out there, I've done a lot of hunting. How many of you hunters out there forgot to disengage the safety on your shotgun or your rifle when you saw some game? How many of you couldn't get that safety off in time to be able to shoot the game that was in front of you? I used to do a lot of pheasant hunting. And when I was a kid doing a lot of pheasant hunting, boy, pheasants can scare the daylights out of you when you flush a pheasant. It scares you. I forgot to take the safety off many times. Couldn't fire my shotgun because the pheasant was already long gone by the time I got the stupid safety off. Well, think about the same thing happening if you're in a self-defense situation. Although you're not shooting a pheasant, you're not shooting ducks or deer. You're shooting at somebody trying to shoot back at you. You don't want to forget to take the thing off of safety. Well, you don't have to worry about that with a Glock. Again, like I mentioned, get your weapon out, get a sight picture, and pull the trigger. And sometimes you won't even have to get a sight picture. Sometimes it's so close, the range is so close, your aggressor is so close to you that basically you'll be able to just point and shoot. Sometimes that's all you're going to have time for, point and shoot. But it's all you have to think about. You don't have to think about getting rid of a safety. And in my opinion, folks, that is huge. That's worth some of the other sacrifices. And there are some disadvantages to Glocks, which I'll talk about shortly. But that's worth some of the other sacrifices to have a gun I don't have to think about. And again, I think that's what law enforcement was really attracted to, is the simplicity of it. Get it out of your holster, point, pull the trigger. The gun will fire. Now, what happens when you pull the trigger is there's actually a little safety in the trigger itself. If you look closely at a Glock trigger, there's a little part that sticks out in front of it. That has to be pulled back. Well, that naturally happens when you pull back the trigger. There's also there's what's called a safety plunger. Inside the frame, inside the slide, there's a little plunger that has to get pushed before the striker will actually fire the gun. And that happens when you pull the trigger too. So the motion of pulling the trigger disengages those two safeties for you. Now, some people say that's a disadvantage, and it's a big argument. A lot of people say that's a disadvantage. Some will argue that a Glock is not as safe to carry as compared to a 1911 or a decocked SIG. And some of the people who make that argument, they've got some valid points. If you draw a Glock out of your holster and you put your finger on the trigger accidentally, you will fire the gun. So it takes a lot of training to make sure you don't put your finger in the trigger until you're ready to shoot. If you draw a 1911 out of your holster, assuming the safety is on and you accidentally pull the trigger, you're not going to fire the gun. until you depress the thumb safety. But again, like I mentioned, that could be a negative because that might be a safety you might forget to push at all. So there's trade-offs there. My opinion is I practice and practice and practice so much. It's been drilled into my head not to put my finger on that trigger till I'm ready to shoot. So my index finger is nowhere near that trigger when I'm drawing my gun. Now, I practice a lot, and that's key. Practice. Okay? But I'm going to give a little bit of an edge to the people who make the argument that it's easier to have an accidental misfire with a Glock than with, for example, a 1911 or a Sig Sauer type pistol or a Beretta type pistol. Yes, I'll give you that argument. Okay, but proper training pretty much makes that go out the window. So just keep that in mind. Now, for those of you kind of new to firearms, don't worry. The Glock is not going to go off by itself when it's in your holster. That's a myth I want to bust. They don't go off by themselves. Glocks never go off by themselves. A Glock will not fire the way that weapon is designed. It will not fire until the trigger is pulled. It's impossible for the trigger to be pulled while it's inside your holster. As long as you have the proper holster that covers up the trigger so that the trigger is not exposed. Okay. Now, if you were in a holster where the trigger is exposed, well, then never mind what I just said. That's an unsafe holster. I don't recommend carrying that. Do not carry that kind of a holster. But, you know, 95% of the good holsters out there cover the trigger. That gun cannot go off while it's inside your holster unless the trigger is pulled. That's what those two safeties I explained earlier are built into the weapon for, so that it doesn't accidentally fire. So Glocks are safe to carry. I want to bust that myth too. You got a lot of people knocking Glocks, saying that they're not safe. They are. Now, another point I want to cover regarding the Glock pistol. Some people say, well, they're not very accurate. And where they get that from is, if you remember, if you listened to my episode 5 on the 1911, I talked about how a lot of 1911 are built to tighter tolerances. And what I meant was that everything fits together real tight. In other words, you can't wiggle the barrel very easily. You can't move the slide back and forth very easily on a 1911 style pistol. Okay, that also has a tendency to make the gun less reliable. Now, I know I might get a lot of people arguing with me on that. The 1911 homers are going to argue with me on that. And the Glock goobers are going to be happy that I just said that. Okay? I call you homers and goobers because you got a lot of narrow-minded people in the firearms business. I praised the 1911 a lot in my previous podcast, and I would have no problem carrying a 1911, folks. So I'm not going to say there's only one kind of gun and it's all you should ever carry. I'm not going to be that arrogant to you. I owe it to you to give you a better show than that. But what I'm trying to say is that Glocks have looser tolerances than a 1911. So some people say, well, they're not as accurate because the barrel can move around a little bit more and you have a less accurate pistol. Theoretically, yeah. But I urge you to go back and listen to the 1911 podcast, episode 5. I talked about the difference between inherent accuracy and shooter accuracy. Inherently, the Glocks are probably not as accurate as a good 1911. Inherent accuracy means how accurate is the pistol. But you have shooter accuracy. And as I mentioned, you could take a $2,000 customized 1911 built for supreme accuracy and put it in the hands of somebody that doesn't know how to shoot, and somebody who does know how to shoot with a Glock will beat him every time. Shooter accuracy has a lot to do with it. And in a self-defense situation, how cool you can remain under pressure is going to determine, in large part, what your shooter accuracy is. Also, your muscle memory is going to determine your shooter accuracy quite a bit. How often have you practiced shooting that gun? How often have you practiced draw, sight, picture, fire? Draw, sight, picture, squeeze the trigger. Draw, sight, picture, squeeze the trigger. How often have you practiced squeezing the trigger, not jerking the trigger? All those will make you a lot more accurate. And for target shooting, for standing at 25 yards in bullseye shooting, you don't want a Glock. You want a 1911 if you're going to stand there at 25 yards and see how close to the bullseye you can put your bullet. A 1911 probably in bullseye shooting will beat a Glock every time. Combat shooting normally does not take place at 25 yards. Combat shooting normally takes place at about 2 to 7 yards. Like between 5 and 21 feet. Glocks are plenty accurate for 97% of the combat shooting distances. And for the 3% that you're past 21 feet, Glocks are still pretty doggone good. You know, keep in mind, you need to hit a man-sized target. Now, a Glock can also be shot very fast. And I'm going to conclude this show. I may have to do a little bit more on Glocks in the next show, but I don't want to run too long. I'm going to conclude this show by talking about how to shoot a Glock properly and how to shoot the trigger properly. Okay? Learn to do what's called shooting to the reset. Shoot to the reset point. And with my voice, it's hard to explain to you how to do that. I could show it to you easier. I'll try to find a video on how to shoot to reset and post it in the show notes. If you've ever taken a good pistol training class, they've probably taught you how to shoot to reset. Now, 1911s have a real short reset. What do I mean by that? After you fired the gun, the trigger resets itself so you can fire another shot. The distance that the trigger travels to reset is what's called trigger reset. A 1911 has an extremely short distance to travel. Probably the shortest of any pistol out there. Which means it resets real fast. Which means you can shoot a 1911 real fast. But remember, most 1911s are 45 ACP. And for a lot of people, it's hard to fire the 45 round real fast. Now, I prefer Glocks in 9mm. And I'm not going to get into a caliber argument. You can go back and listen to, I think it was my second episode. Might have been my first episode I talked about caliber. I can shoot a 9mm Glock pretty darn fast by shooting to reset. What that means is when I pull that trigger, I only let the trigger out far enough till I feel the click of the reset. And you can feel it. It's a very distinct click when that trigger resets. I've trained myself to shoot that way. So I'm not letting the trigger all the way out because I don't have to. So when I fire that gun, I'm only letting that trigger out maybe like a quarter of an inch max. I've actually never measured the trigger reset on my Glock, but it's not much. It's longer than a 1911, but it's not much. It resets very quickly. And this is an advantage a lot of Glocks have, all Glocks have, over Smith & Wesson M&Ps, Springfield XDs, and most of the other polymer handguns out there. I've tried all those triggers. I've tried the trigger on a Smith & Wesson M&P. I've tried it on a Springfield XD. I'm sorry, folks. Out of the box, factory, neither of those two pistols have as good a reset as the Glock. Now, you can modify the triggers on those other pistols to shorten the reset to be as good or better than a Glock, but I'm not a big fan of modified triggers for a concealed carry pistol. Too many things can go wrong with modified triggers. All right? You don't want anything going wrong if you have to defend yourself. So shoot to reset. Only let the trigger out as far as you need to for it to reset for the next shot. Once you train yourself how to do that, you can shoot a Glock real fast, especially a 9mm Glock. They don't have a whole lot of recoil. The recoil is extremely manageable. You shoot to reset. Let me tell you what. I mean, this may sound harsh, folks, but I can pump three rounds into somebody pretty quick. And I'll still have another 13 rounds on board on my Glock 19. It carries 16 rounds. I can pump three rounds real quick. It's still got 13 more. Only reason I might need more than 16 shots is if there's more than 16 people, right? Okay, I'm not a comedian. But anyway, shoot to reset. That's one of Glock's strengths, is that the reset is very short. Again, not as short as the 1911, but... Okay, remember all the other advantages that we've talked about today versus 1911s. So that's kind of my case for the Glock. One more thing before I let you go. I do prefer Glocks in 9mm just because of the high capacity. And again, I feel very comfortable carrying 9mm with good ammunition that does what it's supposed to do. Again, go back and listen to one of my other podcasts on caliber selection. But with that, I think I've made a pretty compelling case for the Glock pistol as well. I think I have more to say, but I'll wait and I'll save that for the next podcast. So I hope that you have enjoyed this. Again, anybody want to disagree or have some facts that you want to set me straight on, I'm always open to constructive criticism. Jump on the blog and post a comment, and I will respond as quickly as I can. So thank you for listening to Episode 6 of the Handgun World Show. And why do I carry a gun? Well, because I can't carry a cop. Thank you for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. Bye.